On this 18th day of October 2011 in San Diego, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Chapter 5, Karma Yoga, Action of Krishna Consciousness, text number 3. Geya sanitya sanyasi, yo nadveshti nakankshati, nirvanvo hi mahabaho, sukam bandhat pramuchyate. One who neither hates nor desires the fruits of his activities is known to be always renounced. Such a person, free from all dualities, easily overcomes material bondage and is completely liberated, O mighty-armed Arjuna. Purport. One who is fully in Krishna consciousness is always a renouncer because he feels neither hatred nor desire for the results of his actions. Such a renouncer, dedicated to the transcendental loving service of the Lord, is fully qualified in knowledge because he knows his constitutional position in his relationship with Krishna. He knows fully well that Krishna is the whole and that he is part and parcel of Krishna. Such knowledge is perfect because it is qualitatively and quantitatively correct. The concept of oneness with Krishna is incorrect because the part cannot be equal to the whole. Knowledge that one is one in quality, yet different in quantity, is correct, transcendental knowledge, leading one to become full in himself, having nothing to aspire to or lament over. There is no duality in his mind, because whatever he does for Krishna. Being thus freed from the platform of dualities, he is liberated, even in this material world. Om Jnana Timarandasya, Jnanandana Shalakaya, Chakshu Unmudatam Mena, Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So once again, the theme is, in a little different way, one of reconciling the idea of acting, but not being, but still being a yogi, still being on the transcendental platform, and being a sannyasi, even though one is acting. And the answer, how can that be? It's the reconciliation of acting in knowledge. The knowledge is very important, as emphasized in the last chapter. If one does that, acts in such a way, then he's always a sannyasi. Now, sannyasi, of course, we know as someone in the fourth order of life, in the varnashram system, in the fourth ashram. But here, Krishna doesn't say anything about ashrams, varnashram. He's talking about the essence of sannyas, which is to be free from the dualities, free from any attachment to or abhorrence to the fruits of one's activities. One who neither hates nor desires the fruits of his activities is always renounced, is a renouncer, sannyasi. Such a person, free from all dualities, easily overcomes material bondage and is completely liberated. So what is it that keeps us unliberated is our desiring the fruits of our activities. Everyone, now this desire may long precede the actual activity or getting any fruit from it. One has some kind of material aspiration and you work toward that, right? All in the distance is some material ideal that you're working toward. And that's an attachment. Even if you never even achieve it, the attachment itself means that you're bound up. It's not the things that bind us, it's the attachment for them. Or the it may not even be something tangible. It may be a position, an honor, an honorific before your name or something that you're looking for. You know, your 15 minutes of fame. You know, something, it's not something you can touch, but it's something very real, something tangible. So that's called kankshati. You know, kankshati is this aspiring for something material. And that alone will bring you back again and again to this world. So, and on the other side is the dveshti, There's two sides of the same coin. Dveshti means abhorrence. You can hear it's called hatred. Abhors, you see, abhorrence. One abhors or longs for something. So oftentimes we're faced with the results of somebody else's activity. That's just abominable to us. Maybe they get the prize, they get the position, they get the money, they get the girl that we wanted. Then we hate that. We hate that result of their activity. You know what I mean? It's a tremendously entangling web, this duality of desire and hate, desire and hate. So this is called duality. But one who does not desire or hate, near dvandva, these dvandva. This dvandva is this duality, and this is keeping us bound up. In chapter 7, Krishna, near the end, he says that everyone's bound up. Anyone who comes into this world, as we all have, we're bewildered by this duality. Icha dvesha samutena dvandva mohena bharata. Sarvabhuta nisang mohang sarga yanti parantara. So this icha dvesha is exactly the same thing. It's the same word, dveshti. Right, icha means desire, that's the kankshati part, and dvesha is dveshti. So icha dvesha samutena. Arising from that comes this delusion of duality. Icha dvesha samutena dvandva moha. And by that dvandva mohena, we are completely bewildered. Dvandva mohena bharata sarvabhutani sammoham. Not even just human beings. Every living being who's conscious, who has senses, he's got this, you know, idea that this is pleasurable, this is painful, this is good, this is bad. So that dvandva mohena, but this is a delusion of duality. Dvandva mohena bharata sarga yanti parantapa. We all come into the creation that way. So how to transcend that? Well, he gives it in the next verse in chapter 7. Yesham dvanta katam papam jananam punya karmanam te dvanda mohani magdaba jante imam judavata. That one who is finished with sinful activities. Now, sinful activities are deeply categorized, or characterized rather, by this dveshti and kankshati. You know, you hate somebody so much, you know, you want to kill them, punch them, hurt them somehow, right? That's a sinful activity, you know, backed up by a sinful desire. You want something so much, you'll do anything for it. Rob, steal, cheat, no morality. You can see how papa is deeply enmeshed in this strong desire and repulsion. So here he's saying you have to give up papa. You have to give up sinful activity. Antakatam papam. And only performing pious activity. Now in this context, pious activity doesn't have anything to do with going to heaven or anything like that, or doing good works in this world. It means bhakti. It means bhakti. Bhakti is in the category of transcendental pious activity. Yesham dvandakaram jananam punyakarmanam te dvanda mohanyamaka. One is liberated thus from the delusion of duality and and in that state, one can be firmly fixed and worship me with firm determination. If one is still in this duality mode, then the determination to perform devotional service does not take place. That's mentioned in the second chapter. Bhoga Aishwarya Prasaktanam Tayabhichetasa. One who is too much involved in bhoga and aishwarya, opulence and enjoyment, and who's bewildered by those things, the firm determination to Krishna consciousness does not take place. So back to our verse. Sukham bandhat pramuchyate. Now here, it's interesting. Okay, he becomes happy. He's happily freed from all bondage. We have to understand there's different standards of happiness. Real happiness means something that doesn't end. It's not based on anything material. It's not based on the contact of the senses with the sense objects. It's based on the contact of the soul with the Supreme Soul, with Krishna. And therefore it can go on eternally, because the soul is eternal, the Supreme Soul is eternal, the relationship is eternal. The only thing preventing us from experiencing it now is our conditioning under the modes of nature, which induces us to forget Krishna. And rather than relate to the Supreme Soul, Krishna, we relate to the material energy, the senses and the sense objects. We're looking for happiness in the wrong place. And therefore, we're in this world of duality. So we should aspire to become a sannyasi in this sense. Ultimately, we may become sannyasi in the other sense also. But the essence of sannyas is this life beyond the dualities, of acting in such, one acts, but he doesn't act on the basis of hatred and desire for material things. He acts on the basis of a duty in Krishna consciousness. Okay, any questions on text number 3? Sankhya Yoga Pratak Bala Prabhadanti Napanditah Ekamapyastita Samyag Ubayor Vindate Palam. Only the ignorant speak of devotional service or karma yoga as being different from analytical study of the material world, Sankhya. Those who are actually learned say that he who applies himself to one of these paths achieves the results of both. Purport: the aim of the analytical study of the material world is to find the soul of existence. The soul of the material world is Vishnu, or the Supersoul. Devotional service to the Lord entails service to the Supersoul. One process is to find the root of the tree, and the other is to water the root. The real student of Sankhya philosophy finds the root of the material world, Vishnu, and then, in perfect knowledge, engages himself in the service of the Lord. Therefore, in essence, there is no difference between the two, because the aim of both is Vishnu. Those who do not know the ultimate end say that the purposes of Sankhya and Karma Yoga are not the same, but one who is learned knows the unifying aim in these different processes. So here, Prabhupada equates karma yoga with bhakti yoga, because ultimately they all culminate in the same thing. Karma yoga sometimes means acting, and then later on not being conscious of Krishna, and then giving the fruits of one's activity as much as possible to the service of the Lord. But that's a lower stage. Obviously, we want to come to the stage of always remembering Krishna while we do the same activities of devotion. But here, Prabhupada equates karma yoga, because Krishna says Sankhya and yoga. There's two things there. Sankhya and yoga, work in devotional service. So the idea is that they complement each other. They complement each other. The perfect description of Sankhya yoga is in the third canon by Lord Kapiladeva. And it's just, you know, it's saturated with devotional service. But there's several chapters where he analyzes the material energy. How did this creation come about? How the different elements come about by the contact of the false ego with the different modes of nature. You know, we won't go into detail. But in the end, you know, actually in the beginning, he glorifies, in the first chapter is called The Glories of Devotional Service. So there's no question where he's going with it. But there's a lot of this analytical business called Sankhya. Sankhya simply means analyze everything. Because unless we have a firm understanding of who we are and how we fit into this cosmos, what it's all about, what the source of it is, as Krishna, our devotion will be, it can easily be deviated. This is why we have these three elements of sambandha, abhideya, prayojana. Sambandha is all of this understanding. Who am I? What is this world? How did it come about? What's the origin? Who is God? Who am I? All of that is sambandha, understanding. And on the basis of that understanding, you can have great faith and determination in your devotional service. Now, it doesn't mean you have to wait to know, you know, all of these things in detail before you act in devotional service. But it means that in the course of your devotional service, you should not fail to cultivate a firm understanding of these points. And then your faith deepens. It deepens. Just like if you want to become a doctor, you know, then before you operate on anybody, before you write any prescriptions, you know, you have to know so many things. What are the different diseases? How does the body work? You know, it's so complicated. So obviously, you have to have that knowledge before you practice something, right? And then the practice can be effective. It can be safe and effective, as they say. The same thing is true for anything, and why not for spiritual life? The more you know about what is what and how it's going on, the more faith you'll have in the process, and the quicker you'll advance. because it's very mysterious. It's esoteric. The whole thing is based on knowledge of things beyond the senses, beyond our normal ability to know. So it's a tricky business, you know. You have to be in contact with someone who can instill faith in you in something that's beyond your ken. Now, the wonderful thing about the process of Krishna consciousness is that by taking up the chanting of the holy name, chiefly, one gets an experience of the transcendence directly that then is confirmed by what you read. You know, I mean, this has been my experience. But people read this book, you know, so many people read it or they read parts of it, but to many people it's completely opaque. It doesn't mean anything to them. Other people pick it up, and like Mahatattva was stating this morning, he was like, you know, it was the most important thing in his life, you know. Now that's someone who's ripe for devotional service. But why? Well, previous life, you know, cultivation, and in this life, you know, asking so many questions. But the idea is that by cultivating the knowledge and reading and thinking about understanding, making an effort, then the practice of your devotional service becomes confirmed. It's not easily, you're not easily swayed, you know, because we always have to remember that this material energy is always ready, you know, to try to convince us that you know, this is all a myth, that really you should be doing something else somewhere else. You know, that's the business of material energy. So that's regular study, regular classes, constantly confirming that knowledge. And we don't want to be, you know, in this foolish, Krishna says bala, the childish ones, they don't understand that Sankhya and yoga are complementary. And if you're a good Sankhyaite, you'll also be a good yogi, and vice versa. They're not, you know, mutually exclusive, they're complementary. Okay, any questions on this? Yes, Prabhu.
So, I can see how understanding Sankhya would help in devotional service, but if, and isn't really all that someone needs, just, you have to have faith in the guru, they follow the guru's instructions, then do they need to understand Sankhya in order to...
Well, you know, the guru doesn't exist in the vacuum. The guru comes in a line. So if you're speaking of the guru in the line of Srila Prabhupada and who we know, then what are they going to tell you? Read Prabhupada's books. I mean, Prabhupada himself spent so much time, you know, painstakingly presenting this knowledge for us. And he definitely, there's no question that he wanted us to read these things and to you know, read them threadbare, understand them, you know, like that. So you can't get away from it. Now, of course, you know, theoretically, and not really theoretically, actually, if you just chant Hare Krishna from now on and don't stop, you go back to guided, you know. But the thing is, it's very difficult to do that. The mind is so wild, you know. We need, like, intellectual nourishment also. And that's why, you know, this wonderful philosophy, which is so consistent, so thorough, you know, how the creation comes about, you know, and the different manifestations of God, you know, for different people in different moods and different times, it's intellectually nourishing. It doesn't leave you, you know, searching for more content. There's all the content you can handle is right here, you know, and so we're enjoined. You know, Krishna wants us to understand these things. He keeps talking here about knowledge. There's no question about it. Now, ultimately, you know, on one side, we also know that bhakti is independent. It's not dependent on knowledge. But in the course of following bhakti as it's been given to us, that knowledge will naturally develop, you know. And just like I always think of in Prabhupada quotes, I just listen to these lectures in the morning. Very in the second chapter, first canto. What does he say? Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Pyojitaha Janayatyashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayara Hoitakam. That if you practice devotional service to Vasudeva, Krishna, then quickly, Ashu, you'll develop Vairagya and Jnana, detachment and knowledge. So what do I have to do? I don't have to do anything else. But part of that bhakti is studying Bhagavatam every day. And later on in that same series, he says, okay, if you want to know the absolute truth, you know, which is known in three phases as Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, then the formula is Tat, Chodadana, Munayo, Jnana, Vairagya, Yuktaya, Pashyantyatmani, Chatmanam, Bhaktiya, Shruti, Gahitaya. He says you have to have faith, to Chodadana, Munayo, be an intelligent person, Jnana, Vairagya, and equipped with knowledge and detachment. You know, okay, so I have that knowledge and detachment, I'm practicing bhakti, I'm developing that. Pashyantyatmani chatmanam, one sees it within oneself, one gets a revelation. But then he said, bhakti shuddha gahitya. If you follow the bhakti process as given in the shruti, which includes the puranas and everything else. So now we're back to knowledge. See? So you really can't separate it in our line. Hearing Bhagavatam every day, that's one of the five most important practices. You know, the five, it's always worth reviewing these things. Srila Rupa Goswami, in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he's given 64 elements of devotional service, in which the nine that we know of hearing, chanting, remembering, etc. are there. But there's 64. But then he gives five, which are the most important of these 64. And when you realize them, well, this is the morning program that Prabhupada gave us. And now we're going to find out what those five are. Tomorrow I'll ask you again if you remember what they are. You know any of them?
Deity worship.
Worshipping the deity with faith and veneration.
Kirtan.
Chanting the holy name. It is. No, we have that's a chanting the holy name. Okay, chanting the holy name, associating with devotees. Okay. Hearing Bhagavatam every day, you know, in the association of devotees. Worshipping the deity, and, oh boy.
Is it from the Bhagavad Gita as well?
No. Living in a holy place. Oh, yeah. Living in a holy place. Yeah. And just see, what do we got? You study, chanting the holy name, associating with devotees, studying Bhagavatam every day, Prabhupada gave it to us. It's the morning program. And of course, the temple, living in a holy place, and the deity worship is there. You know? And it says, even a little attachment or a little experience with any one of these, you can make great advancement. So we have a chant with all five of them. But you see, the Bhagavatam is in there. We can't get away from that. And the Bhagavatam, of course, Bhagavad Gita, you know, is everything in the Gita is there in the Bhagavatam. But the Gita is, you know, Krishna's own words. So, the knowledge, you can't get away from it. The cultivating that knowledge is a very important aspect of devotional service. And we shouldn't be, you know, childish. Yes, Sankhya is there, yoga is there. And if we have good doses of each activity in devotional service and cultivating knowledge, we'll be healthy. All right, text number five. Yat Sankhyai Prapyate Sthanam. Tadyogaya rapigamyate. Ekam sankhyam cha yogam cha. Yat pashyati sapashyati. One who knows that the position reached by means of analytical study can also be attained by devotional service, and who therefore sees analytical study and devotional service to be on the same level, sees things as they are. Purport. The real purpose of philosophical research is to find the ultimate goal of life. Since the ultimate goal of life is self-realization, there is no difference between the conclusions reached by the two processes. By Sankhya philosophical research, one comes to the conclusion that a living entity is not a part and parcel of the material world, but of the supreme spirit whole. Consequently, the spirit whole, spirit soul, has nothing to do with the material world. His actions must be in some relation with the supreme. When he acts in Krishna consciousness, he is actually in his constitutional position. In the first process, Sankhya, one has to become detached from matter. And in the devotional yoga process, one has to attach himself to the work of Krishna consciousness. Factually, both processes are the same, although superficially one process appears to involve detachment and the other process appears to involve attachment. Detachment from matter and attachment to Krishna are one and the same. One who can see these things One who can see this sees things as they are. So factually speaking, one cannot become detached from matter unless he becomes attached to Krishna. And it's also true, you really can't become attached to Krishna unless you make an effort to become detached from matter. And Prabhupada will make that point, and actually Krishna makes the point later in this chapter. They go hand in hand. It's like you know, there's always the do's and the don'ts, right? There's the anukulena sankalpa pratikulyasa bharjanam. These are the first two elements of the sharanagati, of the process of surrendering, accepting what's favorable and rejecting what's unfavorable. So both have to be there. If you just reject what's unfavorable, you're like a personalist, you know? You have to accept all the things that help us become attached to Krishna. And we also have to accept those rules and regulations that help us become detached from matter. But factually, if you know, Krishna helps us. The only way we can at all have any kind of detachment is because we have cultivating some attachment to Krishna. You know, these four regs are inconceivable for people out there. Inconceivable. Even one of the regs, practically, wouldn't even fall four of them, you know. But a devotee who's chanting nicely and, you know, making the effort, you find it's possible to do it. It's possible. It may be a little difficult at times, but you can do it. You know, inconceivable. So that's two sides of the same thing. So Sankhya is, you know, this analytical process, and yoga, you know, and Sankhya also involves the real yogis in Sankhya. They're very austere. You know, they're very austere. They're very detached and renounced. But without, you know, bhakti, they cannot really go very far. You can't go very far just on your own willpower, controlling the senses, austerity. That's dry. And Prabhupada, you would quote this verse, Aharadito yadahiris tapasata takkim. Naradito yadahiris tapasata takkim. Antar bahi yari haris tapasata takkim. Nantar bahi yari haris tapasata takkim. Anyone know what the word is? That's a nice word. Easy to memorize. So, it's like this. It's talking about tapasa, austerity, right? So, the theme of this verse is, what's the use of austerity? Because what he says is, aradito yari hari. Yadi, if you are already worshipping hari, then what's the use of your severe austerity? You don't have to perform it. You know? And if you're not worshipping Hari, then what's the use of your supreme austerity? You see? You're performing all this austerity, but you're not getting to worship Hari, what's the use? And if you're already worshipping Hari, what's the use? And then he says, if you're seeing Hari, Krishna, within and without, then what's the point of practicing, you know, severe austerities? And if your severe austerities are not leading you to seek Hari inside and out, then forget about it. So where is there any room for severe austerities? Actually, we don't perform severe austerities. You know, it's not even recommended. Not too much austerity is not recommended for the bhaktas. It makes the hard heart, the heart hard. You know, the severe austerities. We have moderate austerities. One, you know, two fast days a month, big deal, you know. You've got these yogis fasting for years. They're slowing down their breath, so they're hardly even breathing, you know. They're eating, if they're eating at all, they're eating, you know, like we read about it, some from previous ages. You know, the fruits that fall off the tree, they're eating the bark, you know, nothing. Yeah. We're eating prasadam three times a day, you know, and then one time we have half day fast, we think it's the end of the world, you know. But still, if we follow the prescribed austerities, as mild as they are, in truth, Krishna will be pleased. You know, follow the mild austerities and put our full energy in cultivating love for Krishna. That's the program. And then, that's real sannyas. So if you're a good Sankhyite, you'll be a good yogi. If you're a good yogi, you'll be a good Sankhyite. They go hand in hand. Yeah?
So why is it that a lot of the stories we hear of devotees, a lot of them do involve pretty severe austerities, like everything, you know, Tulsi Devi, for instance?
Yes, they're from bygone ages, you know. This is, you know, this is all by way of kind of giving us the ideal and the great heroes of yesteryear kind of thing. And, you know, Kulsi, of course, is in a different category. She's internal energy, Leela Shakti, whatever. But perhaps more, you know, I mean, enlivening in a different kind of way. If you read the stories of more recent devotees, say the followers of Lord Chaitanya, you know, the 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th century, you know, you'll find devotees who were not really that much different from us. Now, they may also sometimes perform what we know as severe austerities. But for the most part, that's not described. You know, they're chanting and dancing and they're reaching the highest goal of life. You know, Hare Krishna. That's what you read in Chaitanya Charitamrita. You know, the followers. That was the whole point of Lord Chaitanya's movement, is this for the mass. It's you know, the people you're talking about are these, you know, great exceptions. You know, you have millions of years of history in the Bhagavatam, and you have a few dozen stories, you know, high points. You know. But in Lord Chaitanya, you know, in Lord Chaitanya's the time, you have hundreds and thousands and hundreds of thousands of people, you know, reaching the highest goal of life, prema, just by this chanting and dancing. So this is the essence of our movement. It is open. That's why we're sitting here. It doesn't mean that there are going to be exceptions who can perform amazing feats like the Goswamis. You know, they were as austere as anybody in the Bhagavatam. You know, but they're contemporary. They're fairly recent. But what's encouraging is that it's possible for us to actually achieve the perfection. You know, even coming out of, like I did, you know, coming out of the slime. You know, you've been lecha yab in a life. You can aspire for the greatest goal. It's actually quite amazing. Okay, let's go on. Sannyasastu mahabaho.
Sannyasastu mahabaho.
Dukkamaptum ayogataha.
Dukkamaptum ayogataha.
Yoga yukto munir brahma.
Yoga yukto munir brahma.
Nachedena adikacchati. Merely renouncing all activities, yet not engaging in the devotional service of the Lord, cannot make one happy. But a thoughtful person engaged in devotional service can achieve the supreme without delay. Purport. There are two classes of sannyasis, or persons in the renounced order of life. The Mayavadi sannyasis are engaged in the study of Sankhya philosophy, whereas the Vaishnava sannyasis are engaged in the study of Bhagavatam philosophy, which affords the proper commentary on the Vedanta Sutras. The Mayavadi sannyasis also study the Vedanta Sutras, but use their own commentary, called Sharirika Bhashya, written by Shankaracharya. The students of the Bhagavad school are engaged in the devotional service of the Lord according to Pancharatriki regulations, and therefore the Vaishnav sannyasis have multiple engagements in the transcendental service of the Lord. The Vaishnav sannyasis have nothing to do with material activities, and yet they perform various activities in their devotional service to the Lord. But the Mayavadi sannyasis engaged in the studies of Sankhya and Vedanta and speculation cannot relish the transcendental service of the Lord. Because their studies become very tedious, they sometimes become tired of Brahman speculation unless they take shelter of the Bhagavatam without proper understanding. Consequently, their study of the Srimad Bhagavatam becomes troublesome. Dry speculations and impersonal interpretations by artificial means are all useless for the Mayavadi sannyasis. The Vaishnava sannyasis who are engaged in devotional service are happy in the discharge of their transcendental duties, and they have the guarantee of ultimate entrance into the kingdom of God. The Mayavadi sannyasis sometimes fall down from the path of self-realization and again enter into material activities of a philanthropic and altruistic nature, which are nothing but material engagements. Therefore, the conclusion is that those who are engaged in Krishna conscious activities are better situated than the sannyasis engaged in simple speculation about what is Brahman and what is not Brahman, although they too come to Krishna consciousness after many births. So, here the idea is that if you try to do sannyas without yoga, meaning devotional service, then you're going to get dukkha. You're going to be miserable. You know? Because sannyas means complete renunciation, right? Of all pleasurable things. I mean, that's the basic bit, sannyas, complete renunciation. But when then, but the living entity, I don't care if he's in a sannyasi body or anybody, is an enjoying person. You know, we have Krishna's character, Krishna's qualities in minute degree, and Krishna is a supreme enjoyer. So we have to have some platform of enjoyment. Either it's going to be on the material platform, which is generally what you find in the material world, or on the spiritual platform. So real sannyas means giving up everything material, all material aspirations, as we've discovered here, as Krishna has discussed, and engaging oneself fully in the service of the Lord, wholly and solely. That's real sannyas. And there's a notion of enjoyment there. And that's why you find that the Vaishnav sannyasis, if they're really sannyasis and really Vaishnavs, very happy and joyful. They're dancing with those poles, you know. Whereas, and I've seen them, the Mayavadi sannyasis, very dour, you know, because they don't believe, they don't have faith in the reality of Krishna as the ultimate truth. It's all Maya. You know, just try to imagine what it's like to suddenly come, you know, to realize, to think that all these things, you know, that we have faith in, it's just Maya. It's just an illusion. It doesn't mean anything. When they knock the heart, you know, they just like knock you the wind out of you. You know, doesn't compute for devotees. We can't think like that. So, yoga yukto muni brahma nacharinati gachiti, that the sannyasi who is linked to Krishna in yoga, he's on the Brahman, he gets the supreme, he attains the supreme without delay. Nacharinati. But the sannyasi who is not in yoga is just miserable. And Prabhupada is talking about those Mayavadi sannyasis. You know, they're not linked to Krishna in devotional service. They don't believe. And so they spend the days in the dry study of Vedanta without Krishna. You know, in personal interpretation. And ultimately it's not fulfilling. And he mentions that, quoting, you know, basically a verse from the 10th canto, second chapter, famous verse. What is that? Ye nye adavindaksha vimuktamaninas twai ashtabhavad avishuddha buddhaya aduha kuchena padang padang tata patantyadho anaduta yushmarangriya. So here the demigods are praying to Krishna in the womb as he hasn't even taken birth yet, and they're offering all these prayers. And this is one of the prayers is that besides the bhaktas, there are others, ye anye adavindaksha, O Lotus Eye Lord, who are averse to service of your lotus feet. And they think they're liberated. Vimukta manina. They have the conception they're liberated. But they're not. Vimukta manas tvai ashtabhavad avishuddha buddhaya. Their intelligence is impure. And they're averse to you. And therefore, even if some of them may, by severe austerities, aruha means going up, kuchena, to the parang padam, the platform of Brahman, supreme platform. That's kind of a platform. Parang padam, patantyadho. They fall down again because they're averse to serving your lotus feet. It's just like, probably give you an example, like a satellite or a Sputnik or some, you know, plane. You may go very high, but you can't stay there. You can't stay because there's no platform to stand. You have to land somewhere. Either you're going to land here or you're going to go to another planet. Or you cannot stay just floating up there. So this impersonal Brahman realization is just floating in the white light of Brahman with the pure conception that I'm not this body, I'm pure spirit, and that's it. No varieties. Because you don't want any varieties. You think it's all Maya. It's all illusion. But by nature, intrinsic nature of the soul is to have form, and to have activities, and to be blissfully engaged in relation to the supreme form and supreme activities, Krishna Lila. It's not natural to just be conscious that I'm conscious, that I'm conscious. Aham Brahmasmi. It's very dry. So these poor Mayavadi sannyasis, they cannot be sannyasis forever. They come down to do philanthropic activity or something, which Prabhupada says here is completely material. We should never fall into the idea that doing philanthropy is somehow spiritual. If there's no Krishna consciousness involved, then it's material. It may be the mode of goodness, but it's still the modes. You know. Okay, any questions on this? Yes, Prabhu.
Not to digress, just real quick. I know that impersonalists are Mayavadi.
And, yeah. No, there are impersonalists who are not Mayavadis, but all Mayavadis are impersonalists. Mayavadis are a certain brand of kind of fundamentalist impersonalist, because we have to distinguish, because there are some impersonalists like Shukadeva Goswami, the four Kumaras, who became devotees. They weren't Mayavadis. Mayavadis are actually offenders, you know. But some the four Kumaras and the Shukadeva Goswami, they preferred Brahmananda, but when they came in touch with Krishna, you know, in their various ways, it's described in the Bhagavatam, they became great devotees, great, great, great devotees. You understand what I'm saying? So not all impersonalists are Mayavadi. Mayavadi refers to the more recent followers of Shankaracharya studying the Vedanta Sutra and the Sharikabhasha.
So I guess my question was, are all Mayavadis, are they all impersonalists?
Yes. Okay. Yes. That Mayavadi literally means it's all Maya. They say it's all Maya. That's their philosophy.
And impersonalists aren't all Mayavadis?
No. Because they're impersonalists that predate Shankaracharya. And they believe in the reality of Krishna, but they prefer Brahman realization. But then, at a certain point, the famous ones, like the four Kumaras, and, you know, and in latter day, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, now he was a Mayavadi, but he wasn't, you know, dyed in the wool. He was open to, he had the good fortune of coming in touch with Lord Chaitanya and doing some personal service and being converted. So even they can be converted. But in the ancient times, these famous instances of Shukadev and four Kumaras, there's no way they're Mayavadis, because they're way, way before, millions of years before Shankaracharya. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Okay. They're Brahmavadis.
Huh? Brahmavadis. They're impersonalists, but they're open to reformation, you know, to be attracted to Krishna. Under certain circumstances. Yes, sir.
The Mayavadis, as you said, Shankaracharya's followers, they will not understand that Krishna is supreme. Or,
yes, yes.
But even though Shankaracharya said, Bhaja Govindam.
Even though he said. That's right, because they're Mudamate. The dyed-in-the-wool, you know, they will not, right, follow his final instruction. And not only his final instruction, but he also, you know, Prabhupada was fond of quoting Narayano Paro Vyaktat, that this is another statement by Shankaracharya. Narayan is supreme. And he even has a whole song that I never memorized, but it's, the end of it is like that. Padamata Govindam Padamanandam. Pranamata Govindam Padamananda. Bow down to Govinda, the supreme bliss. Pranamata Govindam Padamananda. This whole song ends in that, and it's a description of the glories of Krishna. So Shankaracharya himself was a devotee. He was an expansion of Lord Shiva. You know that. And he was instructed by Krishna to go and preach Mayavad for a certain purpose. You know, but internally he was, and he showed at the end there, Bhaja Govinda. But still, the dyed-in-the-wool Mayavadis, they'll follow the Sharirika Bhasha, and they won't worship Govinda. You know, and it's because they're averse, you know, to this service mood, this humble service mood. If you get it in your head that ultimately you are Brahman and you're non-different from the Supreme Brahman, you can see how they can get puffed up with that. You know, the Krishna consciousness begins, real bhakti begins with humility. Amanitvam adam vitvam. This is the first element of knowledge explained in chapter 13 here. And what did Lord Chaitanya say? The essence of the teachings of how to chant Trinada Bisuni Chena, Tarori Vasishna. You know, that's anathema to the Mayavadis. They become, you know, puffed up with the knowledge. And the thought that, aham brahmasmi, I am Brahmas, I am Brahman. It's the last snare of Maya. Don't fall for it. We're not God. We'll never be God. We can be servants of God. That's our perfection.
Doesn't Prabhupada explain, I think it was in the 18th chapter, that impersonalism stems from fear?
No, that's in the 4th chapter. Yeah, in the 4th chapter, text 10, there's a nice purport. And he's glossing this phrase, Vita Raga Baya Krodha. You have the book there, 410. And you see that, yes, it's the fear. For such material, the form of the gigantic consequently, they consider the Supreme to be impersonal. This is page 196, but he has a different book. So it's chapter 4, text 10. We're down about 10 lines. They consider the Supreme to be impersonal, and because they are too materially absorbed, the conception of retaining the personality after liberation from matter frightens them. So this is the bhaya, you know. Because it makes sense, in one sense, that I know that this material body is the source of misery. So this material body is form. That's the only form we know, right? So you jump to the conclusion that having a form means having a material body means suffering. So I don't want to have a form. I don't want to have a material body. You see? They don't, the concept of spiritual form, eternal spiritual form, is beyond them. So therefore, you know, they have this phrase in America, throwing out the baby with the bathwater. You want to throw out the bathwater, but don't throw the baby out. You want to throw out the idea of being attached to a material form. Yes, yes. But don't throw out the idea of a form and activities, spiritual form, spiritual activities. So this is where the bhaya comes in. Generally, the raga, most of the people, they're not interested. Too much involved in material desire. And the anger, the krodha, comes in when you're cheated by too many false philosophies. And you come to the point, nothing is true. Absolute skepticism. You know, the void is the only thing I have faith in. That's also emptiness. It's like a Buddhist type of thing. So I give up raga, bhaya, and krodha. You know, don't be afraid of spiritual form. Don't be disappointed. You finally come to the truth. All the other philosophies and the other paths you went down, you messed up, we admit. But this one is true. Just because there's counterfeit money doesn't mean there's not real money somewhere. And, you know, don't be attached to things of this world. So give up raga, bhaya, krodha, and become a devotee. Krishna says it. Many in the past have done it. We can also do it. Okay, we should end in time for the kirtan. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.